Orada çalkalıyorum farklı bir
I guess that we better wait a little bit. So we have seven. I'll just wait a few minutes. Hi, Margaret.
Morning.
Good morning. You must be a really wee hour there.
It's 7:15. It's not too bad.
Oh, good. Okay. I have a five discussions because it's not that complicated, the last two, three papers are just kind of a FYI thing. So I'll try to make in 45 minutes to go over all of this. If I have to, then I kind of leave the last one out. Okay, good morning, everyone. I will start with the first paper. First of all, there was no non-neoplastic paper. It's always kind of a little disappointing because we probably don't do a lot of biopsies these days for ILD. So it's getting less and less in the literature. So anyway, the first paper is from Korea. And we all know that the eighth TNM staging use the invasive size excluding the lipidic pattern, and it's supposedly better prognosticator than using the whole size. But also we know that the reproducibility is the problem, and so it was acknowledged by ISLC, and that they kind of felt it's not a random a subjectivity, but there were two areas that are kind of a clustered. So they formed invasive working group to assess, to evaluate the criteria. So they did a reappraisal, and recommended to do something. And the two areas were iatrogenic alveolar collapse as the primary source of overstaging. So, in other words, they just take it as invasion for the lipidic growth. And there's another area that is extensive epithelial proliferation as lipidic, although that is not. So that's the source of understaging. So I'll show you the picture illustrated in the supplemental figure. So they indicated, do you see the screen? Can you all see the screen?
Yes.
Hopefully, okay. So, to be honest though, I would have just called it invasion, but they illustrated this is a source of overstaging. And the this is the understaging because they it's not lipidic anymore because of this complex proliferation, but the people call it lipidic. So this is a source of understaging. And I'm just showing you this first for, and they said oftentimes it may be difficult. So is it lipidic or not lipidic? So they said if you wonder are on the high side, so regarded as a not lipidic because they said this area, okay, this is a actually they said invasion. This is what they say is not clear, but I mean I thought it was a clear, but it was felt to be not clear. But it was it should be regarded as a invasive because the other area shows micropapillary growth, the high grade pattern, and also the nuclear grade is high. So this part they recommended to put as a invasive growth. So that's their recommendation. But the usefulness of this recommendation has not been really clarified. So this group of authors tried to delve at if it's really helpful. And they use these criteria on their group of cases. So if these really have a more improved prognostication with the RFS, the recurrence-free survival, and also to evaluate between proposed criteria and other surrogates like radiologic and pathologic risk factors. So what they did was this retrospective study in a single institution, Samsung Medical Center, which is a very large hospital in Seoul, Korea. And they started with 1,487 patients on clinical stage T1 to 3, according to eighth and N0. And they only get the part solid, radiologic part solid, not including pure GGO or pure solid, and during the 3 year period. All were resection for the curative intention. They excluded, the neoadjuvant invasive mucinous and other variants of adenocarcinomas. And they ended up 1,295 cases when they excluded all those exclusion criteria. And they divided into two groups and compared the performance. So they kind of look at the revised PT applying those invasive criteria by ISLC and just without applying those new recommendations. So with and without. So the original T staging versus new staging with a re-review of the slides. So all the slides of the tumor was reviewed about 3.64 per case that was a little over 1 block per centimeter, and two pathologists reviewed, and they recorded all the original and the revised one. And one is discrepant, they kind of with a consensus, doubtful cases being upgraded. So that's what they did, according to the supplemental figure that I just showed you. So outcome data was on the predicting RFS and proof of invasion status like lymph node met or recurrence. Although they acknowledge that absence, the presence is pretty much that there is invasion, but absence doesn't necessarily mean there is no invasion. So they acknowledge the problem, but that's what they use to compare. And the secondary outcome, correlation with PT stage with radiologic surrogate, like SUV max, radiologic consolidation to tumor ratio, and the other things like LVI, necrosis, high-grade histologic pattern, and so on. And the statistical analysis was done as usual. And I'll just have, there are a lot of results, but I just summed up with the two figures. And their patient characteristics were described, and that's as usual. And original and revised the T stage was like this. So agreement pretty much was agreed in 75.4%. So like three quarters were agreed, but a significant minority was downstaged, which is very understandable. But there was upstaging. 2.5% was upstaging. So probably for the reason that we showed, the like a complex pattern was regarded as a kind of a lipidic. So those were upstaged. So 2.5% was upstaged. So with that, the most important thing is a predictive performance. So the proof of invasion was much better with the new staging, that's a red color, over conventional. So they did better with that. So again, so pretty much they proved all the parameters they listed were better with the revised staging. So they concluded that the proposed ISLC criteria did offer better alignment with clinical pathology risk factors and improved prognostication. So that's for this case. Any question? Actually, I have a question to you guys. So what did you think about the one that I thought was invasion? That they, I would have called it this was invasion.
Oh,
I
I agree
agree.
with you.
I would call that
I'm
invasion.
pretty shocked actually that they struggle with those and the other area you showed as well.
Yeah. I
And
mean,
they
this
thought it
was,
was
they were
difficult.
re recommended invasion. And so, yeah, this is also invasion,
Yes.
but that is a questionable, but I thought it's not questionable.
I know the doubtful
Agree.
case was really not doubtful.
So anyway, that was I think you should be aware of that there is a consensus kind of a recommendation. And the Borchuk, the what's his first name? Alan Borchuk did a editorial. So he elaborated a little more and recommended to do KLGB study. That's a short one that can be done easily, and then also prospective study using this. So that's that.
Did they separate out the cohort of patients that they decreased the stage and show that they actually did better than was originally predicted? I guess because from my perspective, I always err on the side of grading it higher just because I mean, lung cancer is not Gleason 3-3 prostate cancer. It does kill people. And so I always would worry more about understaging patients rather than overstaging patients. But
Yeah,
that's just kind of my philosophy approaching these cases.
that's right. I mean, that's kind of a lot of different philosophy. Some will, the go opposite ways. I don't think they the did a separate analysis for this one. They didn't look specifically on the understaged, the overstaged one.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Okay. So the second paper is kind of, also, I guess it's not gonna change our practice right now because it's so rare event. This is about MSI H and the microsatellite instability high and mismatch repair deficiency cases in the lung. That is kind of a not well known as poorly defined in the lung cancer compared to like GI or uterine or other organs. So they try to look at the instance and all that, plus the correlate with other immune markers like PD-L1, TMB, and TILs. So it's from MSK, and they use their huge resource, already the genotyped cases by two methods. One is for tissue. MSK impact testing is for tumor tissue, and they always get the matched blood sample normal in case for the germline testing. And then MSK access testing is for cell-free DNA in plasma. So there's not a tissue, it's just for plasma, cell-free DNA from plasma for tumor and matched buffy coat for normal. So to confirm, they did really did a very elaborate confirmation, kind of a to prove this MSH status by other testing with IDELA MSI testing, MMR IHC testing. So they tried to make sure these are real. And other testing was a PD-L1 IHC and MLH promoter hypermethylation analysis. They didn't do in all cases, but they did on selected cases for hypermethylation status, and also did a whole exome sequencing for TMB, germline analysis in selected cases. The patient who agreed they had the consent for germline analysis, and they also did a TCGA analysis for comparison. They tried to compare TCGA data to their analysis. So, as usual, they did a very elaborate kind of a molecular backup studies, and they did with a clinical pathologic data analysis from medical records and all the usual statistic analysis. So as you can imagine, the instance is really low. For non-small cell carcinoma, only zero is less than one, way less than 1%, 0.41%. And small cell only 6 cases, but it's higher, 1.9 patients. All were smokers, including adenocarcinoma patients in non-small cell. So all were smokers in their cohort. Compared to MSS, the stable cases, non-small cell with MSS high has a higher TMB, so very, very significant higher TMB, 37.4 mutation per megabase versus 8.5. So that's a significant difference. And the same for MMR mutational signature, 43% versus zero. So that's really impressive difference. Somatic biallelic alteration MLH1, when they detect, that's a very significant difference as well. Small cell carcinoma had a similar features, and they did a similar, I mean, they did MLH1 promoter hypermethylation in small cell, and they showed the lower, I mean, the comparant co comparable changes. And advanced MSIH lung cancer treated with the checkpoint inhibitors showed a durable clinical benefit in 3 of 8. So in only 3 of 8, you can say the bright side, well, 3 responded, but 5 didn't. And those who did not respond has these mutations. Non-responders had a STK11, KEAP1 and JAK1 mutations. And it's only 2 patients, but the small cell patient both responded. And I forgot if they, I mean, oh yeah, they all responded, so they didn't do the mutational analysis because they only did a study on the non-responders. So they concluded that MSI, not NSI, MSIH, MMRD define a rare subset of lung cancer associated smoking exposure. At least all of them are smokers, high TMB, and somatic MLH1 inactivation. And the broad range of response to ICI therapy suggests maybe other co-mutational landscapes affect the outcome. So that's the gist of this paper. Any comments, questions?
Dr. Yi, do you think they also think that just doing IHC will be good surrogate markers to detect underlying mismatch repair protein mutations? Meaning you don't need to do the other molecular testing, you
I
just do
see.
the IHCs will
Yeah,
be enough
that's a good.
correlation.
That's a very good point. I forgot they went the other way, So they kind of proved IHC correlates, but they didn't do the other way, IHC. So their test was already selected, maybe Yingchen can answer.
And
Yeah,
also
I think in general, because we know the low percentage that less than 0.1, so we kind of like aim for like association, not like normally suggest people not to do MMRHC on lung cancer because it will waste more tissue than helpful. So kind of like doing the MSI approach first, included in the large panel, would be the best way to triage tissue
good
rather
point.
than do IHC.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah,
They
very good.
didn't analyze for POE, right? Because all these changes could be POE. POE is a driver mutation, introduced mutation in MMR proteins. That's the thing in the G1 field, but I don't know whether they test for POE for the lung cancer.
Yeah, so it's all kind of dictated by the prevalence, what is the more logistically the meaning like makes sense, so the like a GI or the GYN, there are kind of a higher instance, they may better to screen, but not in the lung because the
Yeah.
instance is low. Yeah, so I don't know the answer. Sorry, thank you.
Thank you.
And then the third paper is this is kind of very useful, and I kind of like this paper in that I had the same problem. So we do MTAP immunostain all the time in the reactive versus mesothelioma setting. So loss of MTAP expression is well accepted surrogate for this the CDKN2A the FISH, but interpretation is a problem, So I struggle all the time for in interpretation of MTAP immunostain, and they compare these two clones. So they acknowledge the issue. So they tested do these two clones, do these two monoclonal antibodies with this clone, one from EpCAM, one is from Novus. So 56 diffuse pulmonary mesothelioma, pleural mesothelioma, 47 epithelioid, 7 biphasic, and 2 sarcomatoid. And the profile by they did, as usual, is from MSK also, targeted NGS, and they did a copy number analysis by facets. I don't know what exactly is, but that's not FISH, but something kind of fancy one. Fraction allele specific copy number estimate from tumor sequencing. Okay, well, that's a facets. And then usual thing, CDKN, A2, KNA2A FISH for the cases that are discrepant. When these two molecular analyses give conflicting results, they did end up with IHC, then they did this FISH as a arbitrator. So 19 of 56, 34% of the first antibody, EPR6893, showed equivocal interpretation. So that's the kind of huge, kind of, more than one third showed equivocal results. That's not good due to lush cytoplasmic staining or weak, and then poor internal control and heterogeneous staining. So for that reason, about a third of their cases show equivocal results on this first antibody. And the 30% was retained, and the 36% showed loss of MCAP. As opposed to that first antibody, second one, 1813 antibody, first of all, didn't have any equivocal one, and they have a higher results for the loss, and then kind of a little higher the retained one. But first of all, they did not have any equivocal results, and they shows less blush background stain than the first antibody, and also better positive internal control. That's what they said. And you know, you can see the paper, I can show you, but you know, when I saw it, pretty impressive. And subclonal loss of MTAP expression was seen on the 1813, because it was so clear they could say it's a subclonal loss, but it was kind of wishy-washy on the first antibody, so they concluded as equivocal on that by the first antibody. Also, the first antibody showed excellent performance when compared to the molecular testing. And the CDKN2A FISH results, homozygous deletion as a gold standard, they had a 96% sensitivity and 86% specificity. Accuracy was 93%, which was pretty good. And actually, even better was discrepancy between NGS-based calls versus monoclonal antibodies. So IHC versus NGS-based testing was mainly samples were due to low tumor purity. And then these are low purity cases when they compare with a FISH, 7 of 8 discordant low purity cases turned out to be MTAP loss by FISH. So was really almost like a too good to be true kind of antibody to me. So 1813 did really excellent job. And again, you can look at the paper picture for your own reading. That was pretty good to me, to my eyes. So their conclusion was this one is much better, way better than the other antibody. So I checked what antibody we use, and we didn't use either one. So it's another one, Abnova. So I recommended to check out this 1813 clone at least, that you know, better to check out, because we are struggling with the current antibody. So I wonder how other institutions do.
I just checked our MTAP antibody. We also use either of the antibody mentioned in the paper. We are using 42-T from Santa Cruz.
I see. So do you, your antibody do good? Does your,
I think pretty good, in my opinion.
I see. So how
Yeah.
about Margaret and I don't know, Yasmin use different antibody, or I don't see Kelly, if Kelly's there. Can you
We
tell us?
send our
Sure.
antibodies to we send it to Andrew Cherg in Vancouver, and I'm not sure what he uses.
This is antibody, because we were recommended by Andy, 2G4 antibody. He recommended that, so I suppose he
Right. And
recommended that.
I don't have a lot of experience because we will often just do fish. So I don't really have a lot of experience with it.
Okay, so at least worth checking, you know. But if your antibody does good, you know, no reason to change. But I at least I struggle, you know, with our own antibody. So I will at least you know, recommend, I mean, like just suggest to check out this antibody. Okay. So we have two more papers to go. So let's go on to the next. And this is kind of another very practical paper. Multi-center evaluation of automated multiplex RNA-based molecular assay for all these the genes that are fusion genes that are at least have a targeted therapy used currently or on trials, right? ALK, ROS1, RET fusion. I know the RET is just approved and the MET exon 14 skipping, I think that's kind of quasi ALK. So the ALK inhibitors can be used for this one. I don't know if it's FDA approved or not. So these four fusion genes were checked by IDELA gene fusion assay in 12 institutions in Europe. So they used in 12 clinical centers in all these different countries, and they used already profiled cases. So multi-center observational non-interventional retrospective study to assess the mutational status of 326 archival histologically proven advanced non-small cell lung cancer stage 4 FFP using IDELA gene fusion assay. And all these cases were compared with routine reference methods, FISH, IHC, RT-PCR, NGS, that had been performed previously in all those the institutions. So they used the same block and even tried to do the next cut if it's possible. And they each institution just did their own cases. So it's not like a central thing. So they did the case that they did in their own institution. So exclusion criteria are non-FFPE, DCAS5 samples, or samples older than 9 years or 3 years if compared to FISH results. And the tissue sections were placed in the lysis chamber. So I did impressed by the time. So all this prep time is a 2 minute hands-on time. And the technique can be used on demand. It doesn't have to be batched. And the tests can be available, results can be available within 3 hours. So that's very fast. So two of 326 was, for whatever reason, they said in an error, so they excluded. And the included cases, 150 biopsy, 144 resection. There are 28 cytological cell block, I suppose, two unknown, the procedure. And the one case was also excluded because RNA degradation. So 323 cases were doable. So 99% one cases were kind of acceptable for testing. And the one thing that I didn't realize, they when they tested the gene fusion, so when they detect a specific fusion, that's the positive criteria. So they analyzed separately, but they also included expression imbalance. So that's as a clue as the some kind of fusion that may mean not be the specific fusion they tested, but when there is expression imbalance, that may be a kind of a clue, like an indirect evidence that there is some fusion that is not detected by this specific target. So they included it as a positive in the analysis. So agreement, including that imbalance results, was 96.3% was agreeable with ALK for ALK fusion, 97.2% for ROS1 fusion, 99.1%, well, that's very impressive for RET fusion, and 98.5% for MET exon 14 skipping. So for all genes, it looked pretty good. And analysis of this concordant results by third methods in their table 4 they listed. And it was considered discordant if a third method could not be performed. So if they, for whatever reason, they cannot do the third, and including the insufficient tissue, all of those were regarded as a not as a discordant. So if they did final agreement when they kind of used all those a third method, including expression imbalance cases, it's even better. So for ALK fusion is 98.8%, 99.4% for rose one, 99.4% the red, and then 98.8% for mid exon 14 skipping. So I guess this is kind of almost perfect for testing. So, of course, the method is very complicated. So I want someone who knows better, more well-versed in the methods, I hope Inchen read the paper for the methods better than I did.
So we use this system in LGG in Rochester. So we already use this assay for about more than a year or so. Our small lung panel, the MCLNG, for whoever like order was sent test to us, the small lung panel, the RNA component, we use exactly the same assay. That's probably one of their, that's a European company, so that's their validation report. And they've now get published. We have our own validation report published probably last year. So we in general feel happy with the assay in general. I try not make this as a commercial pitch, but in general, the sensitivity specificity is good. As a kind of a screening or small panel assay, it behaved pretty well. Occasionally you may miss a few of those novel fusions. So it's not like super comprehensive NGS. But it as Joanne pointed out, you only have like 2 minutes tech hands-on time. So pretty much like a save for the laboratory, and performance is in general good.
Do you use the that imbalance thing for as a positive results or not?
So we if we see imbalance, we reflect to fish to confirm.
Oh, okay.
Because in our validation, we did see occasionally if there's amplification, it may show up as imbalance, but not a true fusion. So
I see.
we add a reflex confirmation.
Okay, well, that sounds better. Okay. So this is kind of coming, and I don't think it will completely replace the current kind of panel, NGS panel, but this is kind of a tissue saving, time saving, all that. So I guess be aware it's coming. And the last paper is pretty kind of a short. I mean, I'll just say I kind of a little question about how the this sounds like the non-small cell carcinoma with the clear cell features do have, sounds like do all have this fusion, because I in their case selection, they didn't say anything about that either in the methods discussion anywhere. So my question is, basically they find all the clear cell non-small cell carcinoma with the clear cell morphology, which is not acknowledged as any specific type or anything, because, well, you can have a clear cell features anywhere, So that's pretty much ignored in the current classification. But they looked into any molecular signature in these cases. So they encountered 7 cases. So they did testing for this, and all of those cases had these fusion genes. However, they didn't say how many they found, how many cells, how many cases they found with clear cell features. So, how often you will have this fusion is still a lingering question to me. So anyway, they did the molecular analysis at a retrospective analysis, again, from their pathology file and inclusion with clinical history and follow-up, epithelial phenotype with the keratin positivity, and the 50% or more of a clear cell change in tumor cells. But again, I don't know how many cases they found in their kind of a search. So, and they did all the stains, and they, found some more positive and some more. And so all those results were describing the results. But the point is, how often you will see this fusion is a question. And also, they did a very elaborate molecular studies also. And they made a very kind of a strong discussion about that this could be a driver mutation, because, well, that's the one of the mutation, who cares kind of thing. But they tried to make a case that this can be a driver mutation, driver fusion gene that may be a potential target for the therapy. So that was the kind of a discussion is mostly about, you know, this gene actually, you know. So there, the patients were mean ages, kind of the usual non-small cell carcinomas, 4 female, 3 male, which is interesting, more female, 47 to 81 years. And peripheral and subpleural localization, mean size is 4.1 centimeter. And 5 squamous cell carcinoma, one with a sarcomatoid change, and one with focal glandular, and 2 adenocarcinoma with focal lipidic component, and one with schemoid architecture. And the follow-up, all treated with surgical excision, 3 received post-op chemo, and the 2 with a concurrent the chemo red. None received any targeted therapy. 4 known smokers and 1 is not clear. Follow-up, 1 died in 6 months, and widespread mets, 1 died 1 year, in 1 year with a brain met, 1 alive well with in 4 years, 1 was tumor-free after 27 years, but died of COVID-19, and 1 alive and well after 1 year, 2 were lost to follow-up. So, their conclusion was not so much of a clear cell per se, but it's like with tumor mutation commonly found in clear cell features, with the clear cell features, maybe a target for therapy. That was their conclusion. Any question or comment? You know, the question is, when we have a lot of clear cell features, should we do NGS? I guess regardless, we will do if it is indicated, right? Yeah, if it's stage 4 and kind of a nothing left, then they may do NGS anyway. Is it included in the NGS in tonight? Sorry, I put you a lot on spot.
Yeah, I was just checking. I don't think we cover both genes in sarcoma, our sarcoma panel, the SACP, so we may not detect them. In our large panel, I think we have FGFR3, but I have to check the primer if it's on the 3-prong end or the 5-prong end, because normally FGFR3 is on the 3-prong end. It's the kinase domain.
Uh-huh.
So, but this is on the 5-prong end, so I don't know if we have enough coverage. I'm not sure.
I see. So, I mean, you know, that's what they're saying. So it may be some consideration if you revamp your panel, you know.
Yeah.
And I just, we have a kind of a few more minutes. I want to talk about this paper. This is from China. Incorporation of a lipidic component as an additional pathology key descriptor for non-small cell lung cancer, using a huge amount, you know, China scale, you know, 3,335 cases of lung adenocarcinoma. So it's a large cohort in early stage lung cancer. So the bottom line is they compared with the eighth, the staging, T staging, which already, you know, theoretically exclude a lipidic component in the invasive size, you know? So they compare with those, the current T staging with the lipidic component, presence of a lipidic component. The main problem for me is that they didn't specify how much is LP positive. So because, you know, if you have any even squamous cell carcinoma, you know, if you look at carefully, even metastatic carcinoma, you may have a little bit of lipidic growth at the periphery, you know. So it just doesn't specify how much lipidic is lipidic positive, you know. So that's a little bit of an issue for this paper, because that's all rely on LP plus versus LP negative, you know? in different stage. So their results indicate presence of lipid growth positive presence in the near half of patients had a significantly better RFS and overall survival, you know, impressive the difference than LP minus patients. And the similar results seen in higher stage subcategory, I mean, like in this category, not higher, in this T1A and the T2A. So they look at only stage one. So we are talking about 1A, 1B, N0, and 2A, N0. So we are talking about this group of patients. So when they did in this TISH, the group, they did better in all measure, you know? And then multivariate Cox analysis, LP plus is independent prognostic factor for both RFS and the overall survival. So, I mean, all these impressive results, I think they should have defined how much LP is LP plus, you know? And so again, over and over, I mean, everything is just an impressive difference between LP plus and LP minus. They did better than current PT staging. So they call the modified staging hold better discrimination performance than current PT staging. So again, that's an additional downstage T descriptor for stage one lung adenocarcinoma. Again, I think they have to, we better know what was their LP plus criteria. And, you know, this is impressive. They already, so it may be that, you know, we, the current staging without the clarification of ISSLC recommendation guideline, the current one afterwards may not be applied. So the kind of the way we still stage, although recommended to subtract the lipidic growth, we may still tend to overstage. So that's probably their point. But if we kind of tighten up our kind of a criteria and all that, I don't know you know, this more general thing, not the like a specific, you know, like mathematics involved. So yeah, that was any comment.
Could I ask a question?
Yeah.
So if there was lipidic areas, did they stage these based on the area of invasion? Was that clear? Not the total area, the total
so
size.
They, you know, they, I think they staged as current one, you know? So I assume okay. They use the current criteria that are supposed to involve only invasion, right? So like a double whammy, you know, so you already subtracted, but, you know, comparing just general positive versus not, you know? So like a double dipping, but again, our still conventional way of staging has a tendency over staging because, you know, some people call lipidic as invasive, you know, overtly. Yeah. So there may be still tendency of overstaging, then maybe, you know, discrepancy. But if you apply strictly, then you already kind of you know, factor in the lipidic growth.
That's right.
Know, in the T staging, but LP plus versus negative. So they're kind of, that may be kind of a pause, you know. And they didn't specifically address that issue in the discussion. I'm kind of surprised. Okay, well, we are on the top of the hour, so that's it. And thank you so much for your attention, and see you next time in Halifax.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.